We'll just turn to the question. So, Lauren, how do we proceed?
Yeah, Ephraim, you should, Lynn should be able to help you with setting up the questions. So far, we've received 11 questions that we can answer in this session. So, I'll turn it over to back to you, Ephraim.
Thank you, Lauren. The first question is.
Lauren, we don't see the questions yet.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, the first question I have is, will this presentation be made available for download and distribution? And the answer is absolutely. We want you to have this presentation. We also want you to have any other information that you would find valuable in understanding the rules. Again, let me give you the website address so that you can access information there. It is www.regulations.gov. The next thing you type in is docket ID : EPA-HQ-OW-2009-0596. And we'll make this address available to you in other contexts, but it's really important to EPA that you get the information you need to understand these rules. And so we look forward to both getting your comments today and also giving you additional information as questions come in. So now, what's the next question that we have here?
Actually, we can't see them, so they're stuck in there.
Okay. One question, and Jim, perhaps you could help me with this. Does this rule apply to man-made lakes in South Florida, which are part of a stormwater management system?
Yes, Ephraim, this is Jim Jatina. The rule applies does not apply to South Florida, as you stated earlier. So that will be in our next rulemaking, which will be in August of 2012. We'll cover those waters. It will not apply to any stormwater treatment system that is not a water of the U.S. So anything that is not considered a water of the U.S., the criteria don't apply to. And, of course, there are exclusions for treatment systems from the definition of waters of the U.S.
Thank you, Jim. The next question we've got is, why use the exceedance frequency associated with toxics? Wouldn't something like 25% exceedance be more appropriate for nutrients? What this question is asking is, how do you determine compliance with the rule? And the basic provision that the rule provides for is you determine an annual geometric mean that cannot be exceeded more than once in 3 years. And the basic question is, what is that based on? That calculation is based upon the data that we've collected and the time frame over which that data was collected. It also reflects an effort, when you look at an aquatic environment, it reflects an effort to ask the question, which is, if you get a high amount of nitrogen and phosphorus that impacts the aquatic ecosystem, how long does the aquatic ecosystem need to recover from that impact? And that's what the duration is designed to address. So the rule includes a magnitude, which is the number that we've talked about in this overview. It includes a duration, and it includes a frequency. The duration is over a three-year period. The frequency is you cannot exceed the actual magnitude more than once in a three-year period. Another question is, how are other parameters associated with eutrophication reviewed, e.g., pH, Secchi depth, or turbidity? Jim, you may want to help with this. This particular rule implements one specific provision of the Florida narrative requirements, and that is a provision at subsection 62-302-530-47B in the Florida Administrative Code, and it's a provision which provides that in no case shall nutrient concentrations of a body of water be altered so as to cause an imbalance in natural populations of aquatic flora or fauna. So to implement that particular part of the narrative standard, EPA considered chlorophyll A, nitrogen and phosphorus for lakes, and we considered nitrogen and phosphorus for stream. Other considerations are available under other aspects of Florida's narrative standards. Jim, is there anything else that you'd like to add to that?
No, I think you're exactly right, Ephraim. I mean, the issues of turbidity, secchi depth, we found, I think, and you can confirm, but we found the best relationships, scientific-based relationships with the chlorophyll A, as opposed to those other measures. And so that's why our criteria, particularly for lakes, are based on the chlorophyll A requirement. So if there are other issues of turbidity or other factors that may be causing a violation of the state standards, that would be probably captured under their other more general provisions in their water quality standards.
Thanks, Jim. The next question is, what is the difference between a target, a goal, criteria, and standards? And I think this is a great question because I think we slip into using these terms interchangeably, and they really are different. A water quality standard is made up under the Clean Water Act of three different components. A designated use that is established by the state, which in essence is the state's definition of how it wishes a particular water body to be used, or its determination of what is the highest attainable use for a particular water body. Having set the designated use, and in the case that we're talking about today, I just read you the designated use that Florida has set for